This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is the city of a lot of opportunities, plenty of challenges. If the city and the people who live here are going to thrive into the future, it depends on the decisions that we make today, and every decision counts. One of those decision makers is District 4 City Council Member Ray Saldana. Ray joins us this afternoon to discuss where he wants to take San Antonio, what he sees as the major challenges and the possible solutions. We invite you into our conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet us at @tprsource. Ray, welcome back to The Source.
Great. Dave, it's wonderful to be here.
So how are things changed with the new city council?
Well, you know, it's strange for me to say this, that I feel like the senior, while there's a lot of incoming freshmen, a lot of new faces around the table, but change in a way that I think is a lot of positivity in the air. Folks are excited about new council members with fresh ideas and a ton of energy. So if anything, I think the community should be very excited about what a collection of 10 plus the mayor have got in store for them.
So this is your fourth term, right?
My fourth and final term.
Fourth and final term, term limited out, but you've accumulated plenty of experience and know-how, and you know how to move things through the council agenda when you need to. And now you're on the governance committee, also head of the MPO and other. So you've got a lot of authority and experience.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I tell folks I grew up in San Antonio all my life, got my high school degree here, but I've gotten my PhD in San Antonio politics over the last 6 years on the city council, understanding, you know, how to manage through budget, how to go from, hey, that's a problem in my community, to this is exactly the steps you need to follow to make sure that you get it funded, designed, and built, and knock on that door to tell that community member you brought it to their community.
So it's more than just having good ideas. It's also knowing how to get good ideas, how to have them executed in a way that actually will accomplish the goals, will be funded, and will satisfy the constituents, the people that you work for.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about why somebody runs for office, why somebody runs for the city council particularly, it's to try to make sure that their community's needs are being met, everything from infrastructure, safety, amenities in their community, and people just generally feeling like they're being heard. So it takes a lot of hard work, and that's why it takes a ton of hard work to get into the office. You're knocking on doors, and this is one of the only places where, you know, it's the level of government that is closest to you, and I think people should be proud that all the council members take that very serious.
We want to make sure that this is a conversation with our listeners in San Antonio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We do have a call on our voicemail line, and let's give it a listen.
My name is Jim. I live over near the Five Palms area. There is a easement that runs between Refridge and Timber Rock. This easement is used primarily for CPS, SAWS, and the cable companies. It's maintained by all the homeowners as far as grass cutting and such. But oftentimes they have to get down in there in bad weather, and it's become rather rutted out. And there are times when they won't even venture down that easement because of how wet it gets. Today is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. It would be great if I could speak to someone on city services and see if we couldn't get some type of a roadway base just laid in there in these areas where it is the most rutted out. If you could, I'd appreciate any effort you could on your part. And thank you, Councilman, for all the work you've been doing for District 4.
Okay, Jim there. What do you got to say to Jim?
All right. Well, first, I want to thank Jim for his call. This is exactly how government works. I mean, it's not, you don't have to call into a radio show in most cases, but it works just as well. He lives in an area that's Five Palms, which for many folks who know San Antonio's history know it well. This is an area just outside of former Kelly Air Force Base, just located near Lackland Air Force Base. And we have parts of our community that are coming into their 50th, 60th, 70th year as a neighborhood where we have a lot of catching up to do. So for Jim, that easement, please come visit us at our office right down the street from where you live on Old Pearsall Road, or call us directly at 207-0880. Any one of our all-star team members, shout out to Johanny Hernandez and Ismael Herrera down there, who will take your call and see if we can do that. We've got a lot of practice in putting in some gravel for easements, particularly where there used to be trash pickup in the backsides of easements. Now we've transitioned to roadside pickup at the front, so a lot of these easements don't get the type of attention they need, and we're glad that Jim is the eyes and ears in the community down there can give us a shout out to make sure that we're working on it.
A day like today, we're a lot of rain, but at San Antonio is still a city that can be brought to its knees by half an inch of rain. You know, and today there was supposed to be the ribbon cutting or groundbreaking for a flood control project. They had to cancel it due to rain. So how are we doing on flood control?
You know, it's it used to be the case that I used to enjoy the rain. It meant that I could sleep in late and that I could just enjoy the sound of it hitting the roof. And once you become a city councilman, that changes the first day you take office, because that means that when you get into the office, you're going to have voicemails light up and calls coming into your office about some flooding issues. 6 years after coming in, what I did this morning actually was drive through some of those areas that originally were calls because folks were getting water into their homes. And we're a city where, unfortunately, water still flows south, and a lot of parts of the south side of the city had been hardest hit by some of these flooding events. If folks remember floods of 98 or the Memorial Day flooding that we would get. So I drove through a lot of our big projects, Ray Ellison, Medina Base Road this morning, noticed that the projects we just completed are doing their job. Those are 100 homes that are not affected by the heavy rain as hard as we were hit this morning. But then we had some significant flooding over on Marbach and 410, where we had some water rescues. And that's the interesting thing about, you know, being a council member. You have to be as good as possible about things like flooding and drainage, police safety, park amenities, airports, convention centers. So you can't be specifically focused on just one thing, but you'll get reminded when you're not catching up to the work on days like today that there's still work that needs to be done.
Smart growth is how people say we should deal with these issues. I mean, it's not rocket science. You know, water flows in a very predictable manner. And we know eventually it will rain, and it will rain like today, you know, all at once. Are we putting in the right regulations and doing the right engineering and requirements for developers to make sure that they are thinking about these things?
You know what, Dave, that's a great question, because some folks, you use the term regulations, and people start to get, you know, frightened by the idea that government's coming in and doing too much to regulate business. But here's a perfect example. There are parts of my district that today are not being flooded because we've had to go in and fix where some of the private development just wasn't taking into account the impact that they were going to have around the communities, the older communities around them. So one of the projects I referenced was Ray Ellison. It's a project that included what was called low-impact development. So instead of paving and asphalting the entire street and roadway, we actually left some natural ground and gravel so that the water can seep, as it's naturally supposed to, into the ground, which lowers the speed at which water is rushing to find the lowest point. Oftentimes, the lowest point would be somebody's home, somebody's business. And if, you know, right now, low-impact development, which would make that that project a little more expensive, but a lot more effective at dispersing the fast-traveling water throughout the community, is the reason that you know, a lot of controversy was stirred, because we wanted to make that a requirement. Developers didn't like that.
And I don't think Governor Greg Abbott likes that stuff either. Says, well, we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment for Ray Saldana, District 4, City Council Representative, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, sitting down with Ray Saldana, District 4 City Council member, talking about many of the issues that are on his plate, things he wants to accomplish in his last year on the council. He's being term limited out. What will be his legacy? Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 210-614-8980. Would you consider the Pearsall Park part of your legacy?
Oh, absolutely. I just love talking about this project that used to be the ire of everybody's drive through my district, which is this former landfill that made up about 240 acres of my district. And so I just, for the folks who are listening, we've turned a former landfill that was something that you would just drive by, something that the community who lived around there had to put up with for 30 or 40 years, and now turn that into a huge, it's at the end of it, we'll put in $7.5 million to transform Pearsall Park from a dump to a destination and community members around there. The reason I say that I love telling this story is because I love telling the story of the community members around it who just can't believe that it's real. Some of them come up to me and ask me if they have to pay to get in, or if this park really truly is something that should be in their community, because they felt like for a long time these things belonged in other parts of the city. And so it really is a testament to the stories that I get to hear from community members who just can't believe that something like this is on their side of town. And that's something that I think is important, is that idea, even I grew up with, which is that just our side of town just didn't deserve that kind of positive investment or great amenities. So we're turning that on its head and making sure community members know that they're valued, that they've been paying taxes just like everyone else, and they should see a return on that investment.
I ran a 5K there. That was a tough 5K.
Yeah, there's not many hills in the city of San Antonio. The only place you'll find hills is where there exists a former landfill. So that's a bunch of dump below your feet. But don't worry, it's protected by an 18-inch clay cap, and everything's on the up and up, and we made sure of that. That's why it took us so long to construct and design.
All right, back to the phones. It's 210-614-8980. Daniel is on the line. Hey, Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with Ray Saldana.
Thank you both for taking my call. Councilman, I'd like to know how much of your time is spent, going through the rhetoric and bipartisanship of your role versus actually tangibly getting things done for the city of San Antonio. Is that something that has been a challenge more so now in the current political climate, or is it eased up? How is that tackled throughout your day?
Well, Daniel, thank you. That's a great question. I'll start with this, that there's a great line that says that if you want to feel optimistic about the future of this country, you'll stand on your head and look at it from the bottom up, where cities are in this unique position that politics is at the back of anybody's mind who's a mayor or a council member, because whether it's a pothole that needs to be fixed or a street that is struggling with crime or a park that needs services, you can't hide as a council member. You can't hide as a mayor. You don't always run into your governor or certainly your president, the local grocery store, the gas pump. So it is not difficult for us to get the job done because people hold us accountable in the realest of forms, whether it is them tracking you down when you're on a jog at the park or they're meeting you at City Hall at the center of the city. So the rhetoric has been leveled up, especially on issues that folks want us to weigh in on that are incredibly important, things that come down from maybe the president tweets something or maybe the governor says something that is antagonizing to vulnerable community members. So we feel a sense to protect our community and to ensure that San Antonians know that this is going to continue to be a city that is functioning not just to fill your pothole, but also to bring people in with a welcoming sense of this city that is theirs, and that this is a city where you can still hold individuals accountable at the local level. So that's why I'm optimistic. While the rhetoric is at the volume as high as it can get, communities still have to work and function. Trash still has to get picked up. And no amount of rhetoric changes whether your streetlights stay on or not.
But Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said on Friday on Fox Business News that city governments, particularly those led by Democrats, are to blame for the problems nationwide. He said people are happy with their governments at the state level, but not with cities. He said it's in cities that we see things. Liberal policies give us high taxes and street crime.
Sure. When I hear statements like that, what I think is that somebody is already thinking about their next election. I think that instead of problem solving, what they're thinking about is politics. So you can't have it both ways. Cities are either part and parcel, part of the engine of the Texas miracle that makes the economy of this state one of the strongest in the country. Either cities like San Antonio and Dallas and Houston and Austin and El Paso are part of that success, or they're not. And so to blame cities, the folks who are really carrying a lot of the weight for success of the state, by the lieutenant governor, I think he's generally just interested in what that next election looks like for him. And I think that's the big problem with politics. And what happens at the local level is that people think beyond the next 2 years election cycle and think beyond the next generation of solving transportation issues, public safety issues, issues around housing and congestion. That can't be solved with bumper sticker statements that lieutenant governor has shown that he's been doing. And I think that I'd love to say that Giving him the benefit of the doubt, he may say that, but work with us on other issues, and maybe that's just rhetoric, but at the same time, he'll work with us to make sure we're funding new resources for public safety. But that hasn't been the case. So it's been very tough in this environment to work with the state, who not only works against us in rhetoric, but works against us in the policies that they're crafting in Austin.
Another caller, Jamie's on the line. Jamie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, good day, Mr. Davies, Mr. Saldana. Yes, and thank you, Mr. Saldana. I've seen a lot of improvements in Pearsall Park and Southwest area. Thank you very much for that. I also, my parents live on Hillside Acres. Mm-hmm. That's the little neighborhood right next to Pearsall Park. And for a while, it's been a little bit forgotten, but now that I see that it's been being paved with, you know, new streets, sidewalks made of concrete. And just one question, one concern that I had that I noticed was that there is not really a drainage being done. It's just being put concrete as streets. And I was thinking about it the other day, and today's a good example of that with all this water. I'm concerned about where the runoff is going to go, and for those residents that live kind of in the downstream of those roads, with the concern of water running into their property and possibly causing a little bit of a flood in these okay. type of situations.
Jamie, thank you for the call.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jaime. I think this is an important piece that you said very clearly. This is an area that for a long time had been forgotten. And just to reiterate something that's incredibly important, Jaime, this place was forgotten not by accident, but on purpose, just to make sure that community members are clear on that. If I were to look at my entire district, and Hillside Acres is an area that if I was a politician, this is what a politician does. They look at an area and they say, all right, how can I get something out of an area? If there is no vote, like I can clearly tell you, Hillside Acres just doesn't come out and vote in incredible numbers. It's very easy to forget that place on purpose. If I've done anything over the last 6 years, I hope, Jaime, it's to make sure that those areas have been forgotten for a long time or actually getting the resources. So I'm glad we're going in there with, we're fixing some streets because it was an interesting area. I call it a tweener. Hillside Acres and a lot of streets throughout San Antonio are in this category that falls through the gaps where they're too large for us to fix during our annual budget, and they're too small to fix by a big bond project that we pass every 5 years. So these tweener streets never get touched. So in this case, we had enough money to put concrete streets in, which are going to last 50 years. We need to find other resources to make sure that we can get the drainage issues complete, but we wanted to get the first step done, which is to address the crumbling streets on Hillside Acres. But remember, Jaime, that it's important that you continue to hold people like me feet to the fire to make sure that you're not forgotten. And part of that is folks who come out and vote, because I know that that's an area that for a long time politicians ignored just simply because of that reason. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
So District 4 City Councilmember Ray Saldana, you have signed on to having the City Council take up the doing something with the Confederate monument downtown. So what are your thoughts?
You know, this was an issue that I think we're taking up today in 2017, and I give a lot of really recognition to the folks who came out and protested. And they said, look, this is something that is sitting in the center of our city in a required area of prominence. This is a public space. And so these were members of the African American community in San Antonio who protested that this statue should be at least up for debate to be removed. The reason we're having that debate in 2017 is because we did not have it in 1903 when it was put up. And so now that we've got more of a balanced discussion here, I think this, in my opinion, it's I do not equivocate or hesitate when I say that that statue does need to be removed from public space, from public land. And there are a lot of people who feel like that is trying to take some revisionist approach to history. And, you know, I'm coming from somebody who's studied Texas history and still remember teachers telling me that instead of using the term Civil War, it's the War of Northern Aggression. There's ways to revise history, but statues in public spaces is something that requires prominence, and that's an issue that whether you agree with the Civil War's intentions or disagree with the history of where it came from, it was very intentional that in the 1900s folks wanted to send a statement. They didn't decide to put this in a public space. They didn't decide to put this in a museum to honor the folks who fought. They decided to put it in a public space because they could. And really what we're doing is having a more robust debate with all members of the community. And I think what we need to do is do the right thing by the folks who have come to protest the way that this statue makes them feel, the way that it's given recognition in a public space.
So you're already decided you want it gone?
Yes.
Okay. And so, and then what? What do we put there?
So the question of what you put there is I think less important to me as to making sure that we send the right signal here with what we try to do and having a robust discussion with all members. So a debate is important because all sides are represented. So if at the end of the day we decide to move this to a few blocks away where there is Confederate dead who actually exist in a cemetery, then that might be a more appropriate space for them. But the point is to get it off a public space in the center of our city where prominence and recognition is required. That's why you decide to go through a vetting process before you put anything on public land, because it's an endorsement. And for me, it's more important to make sure that we're removing that type of stain from our city's history of not having robust debates and allowing things to go on public land that send signals. This one sent the wrong signal in 1903, is just as much as it sends the wrong signal in 2017.
Well, one of the criticisms of the removal of these Confederate monuments is that it's a erasing of our history. But if there is a plan to put something else there that addresses the history, but in context, and tell a fuller version of the history, talked about the people who were victimized, as well as the people who fought in the war, and you know, just talking about it with more voices.
Yeah, all that to say that I'm open to any debate and discussion. If they wanted to come in and say, let's cut this in half and meet people halfway, let's keep this, but also add legacy to those folks who were hurt in that era, then I'm open-minded about that. But right now we're having a discussion that's open for a number of different voices to come in, and I think that's what was missing when this statue was erected in the first place.
And what's the process right now?
So currently we've got it going through council. It'll be assigned to a council committee, and I hope ultimately move pretty quickly to try to get to a council vote. But I hope that there's debate that continues to weigh in. And believe me, I have close friends, former teachers who are passionate about this issue. But I have folks and friends who are passionate about it on the other side as well.
Right. But there's some concerns about people doing these major counter protests. We got to make sure that things remain civil.
Absolutely. And I think that's the point, is there was a time in which civil discourse was much more difficult if you were part of a marginalized community. At this point, everybody's voice is equal.
Okay. And you think you should go to the Confederate cemetery?
Well, I don't want to make an endorsement of an idea. That's just my own opinion of a place that would be more suitable than a public place of prominence in our downtown.
Okay. We got Ray Saldana with us, District 4 City Council member. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll talk about VIA. We'll talk about, will CPS Energy be paying more for our city budget? Baseball, which is that something that San Antonio should be finding a place for, maybe downtown. Other issues that you want to bring up, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Ray Saldana, District 4 City Council member. He's in his fourth and final term on City Council, and he has racked up a lot of experience and some seniority on council, and now he's in a position to try to push forth what he thinks are the priorities for the city. Give him a call. Ask him what about certain issues. He'd love to talk to you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Tony is on the line. Tony, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. It's good to talk to you. VIA has been in operation for over 30 years, and they've been doing things the same way. Their motto should be, VIA. You get there when we do. Because many buses don't run that often. They don't run that late. And the thing is that instead of taking a bus from Fredericksburg Road, say the 505 or 509, you have to ride all the way downtown, which can take some time. Then you have to wait for another bus, and it can take most of the afternoon or morning just to get from one place to the other. And I think I'd like to see something like streetcars. We had streetcars before, streetcars, light rail, something like that. an improved system.
All right, Tony, thank you for the call. And now, Ray, you're on the MPO. You're the head of the MPO, Metropolitan Planning Organization. Rapid transit is something that people are calling for. What that means, what that will look like, is still being decided.
Yeah, well, I want to say that Tony speaks from a voice, it sounds like to me, a voice of experience. He knows what it's like to chase down the 505 on Fredericksburg or the 509. He understands how complicated the system is. Not many San Antonians do, but just because not every San Antonian rides the VIA bus is no reason why we shouldn't continue to invest to make the simple things right for people like Tony and the other riders on that bus system. So he's talked about frequency and making sure that VIA is not a bus system that makes you wait an hour for the next bus. And so what we're trying to do is two-pronged. One is that the city will present a budget this Thursday. And in that budget presentation, what we will talk about is an investment from the cities to do exactly what Tony's asking for, to increase frequency, and not just throughout the entire network. There's not enough resources to do that today, but to do the highest trafficked routes, 505 being one of them, and 10 others throughout the city, northwest, east, and south, that would go from 45-minute wait times to 20-minute wait times, and those that were 20-minute wait times down to 12. And once you have a bus system that is that frequent, that efficient, you not only get riders like Tony, you may even get riders like Dave Martin Davies, who says, you know what, maybe I'll decide to leave my car at home and use the park and ride and go in with 30 of my other friends in and out of I-10 or 35 to make sure that that this system is now bringing in option riders rather than just those who need to ride the bus. So that's the long-term vision of my attempt to sit on the MPO and bring transit to the table, because for a long time, MPO has been specifically focused on building what you see, which is these, you know, $100 million flyovers that take us 4 years to build, and sometimes congestion follows right after we cut the ribbon for them. So we're trying to have a balanced discussion of making sure that we're moving people and not just cars in this city, and that requires a discussion around transportation that's not just that single occupancy vehicles.
Another caller with Sonia, and Sonia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with Ray Saldana.
I just wanted to get your opinion. There's some major gentrification happening on the south side and east side of San Antonio, and it seems that on both sides, our district people are not responding to it. They don't see the urgency to it, and it's getting severe to the point where people who live in those areas, like myself, cannot afford to eat in the restaurants that are opening or even go to the HEB down the street because it is catered to more higher end. That's what's coming in. So where do we go? We're getting pushed out. We no longer live in the neighborhoods that we've grown up in. Our families have grown up, mothers, grandmothers. We're losing our city. We're losing the city, our culture, everything. It's disappearing slowly, but it's happening.
So the important thing about what happens in a city that is growing as quickly as we are here in the city of San Antonio is that they have to face difficult challenges. And one of those that Sonia represents is incredibly important, which is that we're a city that has been very prideful of how culture rich we are in our neighborhoods, and in the way that we eat and shop. So we're growing so quickly in some of our areas that we have a lot of new community members moving into older neighborhoods. As she described, in the Near East Side and the Southeast Side, sometimes following big public investments like the investment that we made on the river. So when you dump or you invest $100 million into revamping a river that for a long time had been forgotten, private sector is going to respond, and they're going to build out what will be, you know, housing units, sometimes housing units that would price out their own neighbors who are living in the area. So what we're trying to do, Sonia, is that we're trying to incentivize affordable housing so that places like the downtown and the Near East Side are not just approachable by those folks who make over $100,000 a year, but that we fit for those young professionals, those first-year, two-year teachers, so that they can live in the downtown or the Near East Side, so that then the market has to cater to the entire spectrum and not just those individuals who can afford to pay, you know, $1,600 a month for rent. And so what we can do, so just to test us and hold us accountable on this, I hope you'll watch, because the city has property that it owns, because right now, you know, we certainly can't go in and tell a developer this is the way it needs to be built and this is how you're going to manage your rents. But the city owns land, and what we're going to do is try to do some housing on there that meets the needs of those folks who are, you know, young professionals and entry level. So we're trying our best, but this is a problem that we need to make sure that we're cognizant of. Thank you, Sonia.
But people have talked about these infill development zones, and some are saying that maybe the city is being too aggressive in trying to lure developers into these development zones, not thinking about community compatibility in that area.
Well, where we've seen that is places like the Near East Side. Dignity comes up as a big example of that, where, you know, the private market is going in and seeing a vacant lot and seeing dollar signs, because that is a property they can build on. And the problem is that the property that was worth maybe $10,000 to $12,000 will be worth, with a home, over $400,000 by the time they're done with it. And next door is a community member whose home may be valued at, you know, $60,000 10 years ago, and now over $200,000. So what we're trying to do is figure out how do we compete with a market that is moving faster than the public sector can respond. The thing that we need to do is look at a place like Austin, who is trying to pass these great bonds that we've just now dipped our toes in, which is our housing bond. What that does is that goes in, you can go in and incentivize affordable housing, build on some vacant property, but make sure that those homes are subsidized to make sure that our neighborhoods look like our city, that we're not making the same mistakes of the past and segregating ourselves by income. And the fortunate piece for the downtown is that we don't have a lot of people who live in our downtown, and that's where we're seeing a lot of the city incentivizing some of the development. But we think that soon we're going to have to start catching that up with affordable development in our downtown area.
Another caller, Teresa. And Teresa, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with City Council Member Ray Saldana.
Well, greetings, Councilor Saldana. My question is how do you plan to accommodate the rail system with all the changes that have been made in the downtown area and around the city in moving utility lines? And the one that's the most dangerous, how can you put a rail over a gas line? Gas lines aren't moved that easily. Once they're there, they're there. And you'd have to tear up the whole downtown area to get them moved over to a convenient place for the rail. How would you accommodate rails with the change of utility lines, everything in utility that has been moved to accommodate?
Okay. Teresa, thank you for the call. And question to Ray Saldana.
Yeah, Teresa, I think what you're describing is that is a future of the city of San Antonio that includes rail. And we're one of the largest cities in the country to not have rail. And it's not just to say we want rail because other folks have it. That's the how. How is getting to a multimodal transportation system with rail. But the question we have to answer is why. So why we need to put rail in areas is a conversation that needs to be, that you can't have in city halls behind closed doors, and you can't have at commissioner's courts behind closed doors. The question of rail is one where the city is trying to answer how we compete with a million people coming in to the city, and the particulars like you've described around right-of-way, around utility, that's something that needs to happen with the entire community's input. And so where we can, there's probably some easy examples of places to get to rail where people need to get to today already, whether it's from the medical center into downtown or from the airport into the downtown, or maybe places like Texas A&M and UTSA into the center of our city. So I think you start with those outlying comprehensive lines. And then I think before you get to rail, you start to figure out if bus rapid transit is a better option for you. So that you can prove the concept. When you have a number of people moving through one specific corridor, at some point it makes sense, you know what, you need to go to moving more people all at once. And that next step is rail. But for first, you need to make sure that you got a great bus system, BRT system that are true BRT, meaning they have their own dedicated lane, signals prioritization, and people are zooming past congestion in cars because they're in buses. So I think that's where you get to before you get to rail. And I think all said, it's a multi-year conversation that includes the voice of the community. And I think that's where this council and this mayor want to go.
We know more people are moving to San Antonio all of the time, a million people additional here in the next 35 years, and we don't have the roads for it.
Yeah. So here's where my my role on the MPO, which is where hundreds of millions of dollars, close to $1 billion, get spent over the span of a decade in making sure that we're building roads throughout our community. Here's what I would suggest to all of my colleagues on the MPO as we consider that for every $5 we put for expanding a highway, for every $5 we put for creating the 281 overhead to get us further and further out beyond 1604 for growth that sometimes we can't keep up with, for every $5 we put $1 into predicting and projecting new growth in parts of the city that haven't seen it, namely the South Side. And so I was visiting Texas A&M San Antonio, who has outgrown its own projections of students. So we think that we need to be putting money where it's going to go rather than just chasing congestion.
Okay, one more segment with Ray Saldana, District 4 City Council member. We'll come back. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Ray Saldana, District 4 City Council representative, is with us in the studio today. If you got a question, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Ray, you used to play a little baseball. You know, played for Stanford as a catcher. Is that right?
That's right. I caught a whole lot of bullpens while I was over at Stanford.
And but here we are in San Antonio talking about baseball as something that the city should be pursuing, a AAA team and a place to make them play. What's happening there?
You know, I this is an area where I think a lot of folks get really excited about what the city's future looks like. More than roadways or investments in parks, it's folks are saying, hey, when's our next major league baseball team moving in, or when are we going to attract an NFL team? I think a lot of that is things that, you know, we have some control at
people
the city
like soccer.
Council. And let me not forget, one of the fastest growing major league sports in the country, which is soccer. It's incredible for people. It's incredible when people come to me and say, bring in this team or bring in, they completely forget that this is an industry where I will just say, I think the biggest fools that are made out of all of these conversations are sometimes cities that are left on the hook having to pay for all of these significant stadiums and baseball stadiums and football arenas that are nearing the billions of dollars.
And these are big cities like, you know, Seattle and other cities, you know, even LA, you know, they're having to pay to build stadiums for professional teams.
And
those are the people, the citizens are paying for that.
And here's the reason why. I mean, we are held hostage because our community wants these things. And so we're also a city that has to compete. And so people are not, we don't live in a world where you have to live and die in the same city where you were born. People have choices and people want San Antonio to be competitive at all levels. And that means a performing arts center, but also means sports teams like the Spurs. And so with regard to AAA, We'll play ball, so to speak, and we'll have discussions with those who want to try to move in a AAA team or a Major League Baseball team or an NFL team. But we need to be cautious of paying for, you know, billions of dollars of stadiums for billionaire owners who probably should be fronting most of it on their own. The problem is they'll say, hey, if San Antonio doesn't like it, well, Santa Fe might, and they'll pay. What do you think about that, San Antonio?
I'd say adios. All right, let's get Robert on the air. He's got a call. Robert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, sir. Well, Councilman Saldana, I'd like to ask you if you think that there's some kind of bias concerning baseball and bringing, you know, kind of a dying sport and the whole concern bringing that to San Antonio as opposed to, you know, as the host said, the MLS growing, soccer, aka football, you know, as it is, you know, we already got rid of the mission or that, you know, they're leaving. What is the purpose, and why is there such an interest in that and bringing a AAA baseball team here when we could focus on bringing a professional team here, like, you know, an MLS team like SAFC, making them or aiming towards getting them into the MLS?
All right, Robert, thank you for the call.
Great question, Robert. And I am bullish about the prospects of the city of San Antonio getting a Major League Soccer team, not only because we've got such great momentum already, but because it's perfectly situated between two markets, between Austin and San Antonio. San Antonio obviously being the beneficiary of it because it's right in our city. But when you look at studies and the economics of sports teams, baseball teams and Major League Baseball and AAA makes more sense economically just because there's more games. And so there's, you know, 80 game seasons, many of those happening in your city, as opposed to something like football where you'll have a 16 game season and only seven of those are played in your actual stadium. So I think when it comes down to the economics, that's why folks look at baseball sometimes. But Major League Soccer, we just need to know what we're good at. And right now we're getting pretty good at selling a really great prospect with Major League Soccer. So we hope that there's a, you know, you'll see a lot of momentum from this mayor and council to try to make that a reality.
There's a proposal by City Councilmember John Courage to add more revenue to the city by getting CPS Energy, which is a city-owned utility, to pay more. Right now, they pay 2.7% of their proceeds to the city at the end of the year, and he'd like to see that go up to 4%. You know, in other cities where it's a privatized utility, you get tax out, you can sales tax the utility, and you do pretty well off that. And I think, what's the comparison?
Well, just for the listeners, it's the San Antonio Water System, not CPS,
oh, I'm sorry,
who we're referring to. So the folks who we, you know, pay to get water versus those who we pay to get electricity from. The idea is that right now you look at SAWS and they're not paying the full 4% versus the 2.3% that they're currently paying to the city. The only hesitation I have about the recommendation so far is that SAWS had been behind on a very long-term basis on making sure that it was keeping up with its infrastructure to ensure that people on the south side in my district, that those pipes under their ground weren't rotting under their feet, causing problems. So they've a lot of catching up to do. And so I worry that if what we do is take money from their effort to bring on water supplies, what they're going to have to turn around and do is just go right back to the ratepayers, my residents, my neighborhood constituents, and ask them to pay more. So I think we need to thread the needle somehow to make sure that revenue for what is the question. And I think if, you know, you look about all the things that we need in the city, whether it's more police officers or more infrastructure that folks need taken care of, we'll look for revenue wherever we can. But let's just make sure that we're not taking it out of the pockets of constituents who really need the work done under their feet or the water coming out of their faucet in a reliable way.
Right, but you can target how you want to adjust rates, and so they don't have to go after small home rate water users and go look at more big industrial users.
I think we have to be careful there because we need to recognize that SAWS is still under a consent decree, which means that it has to put money into specific infrastructure, old pipes that it hadn't been taken care of. The federal government is telling you, you need to pay for this. If you don't, we're going to go and make you pay for it. So I think I just need to be very careful that I like the idea because new council members with new energy are bringing those types of ideas forward. I just need to make sure that we're towing the line and not making our constituents have to pay more.
Another caller with Ron. And Ron, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with Ray Saldana.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. Councilman, I was calling to find out your input about PACE financing or if you are familiar with this avenue that's currently happening these days.
You know what? I'm not familiar with PACE financing. I think that's a
tell us more, Ron.
Yeah, so from my understanding, it's basically an avenue for green projects to be able to happen around the city, specifically with commercial buildings, industrial-type buildings, where they're allowed to use their property assessment to be able to do upfits for, like, air conditionings, new windows, renewable energies, anything along those lines that help provide savings for, you know, CPS customers, SAWS customers, things like that. And I know that the county commissioners is currently reviewing it right now and wanted to see if you've either heard of it or if you'd support it and be able to help get some support in that direction.
Well, Ron, thanks for calling. Thank you for educating me on that as well. Anything that incentivizes good behavior is incredibly important for us to get the private sector, the private market, to jump on board. We talked about early in the program about regulations. Sometimes folks don't want to be forced to do something, even though it might be in their best interest. That's why we need to incentivize. And that's what it sounds like PACE financing might be able to do, is that if you're you own an old building and it has to be retrofitted to keep energy inside rather than out, that there's ways to do that through PACE financing, it sounds like. And so we'd like to study it at the city council.
Let me ask you about what's happening with the, you know, we had the traffic, the people who came up through the tractor trailer, mm-hmm. and the fatalities that we saw there. And I know that was in your district, and you went to the scene and you saw what was happening. Oh, any follow-up that you want to talk about?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing that we took away from that, and just as a, you know, it was 2:30 in the morning that time when I got the call from the police chief, and it was 2 minutes from my home, so I was on scene pretty quickly to see the devastation of the outcome. So the follow-up so far is that we need to learn from instances like that, and I think we don't need to be learning on the fly that victims need to be treated as victims, and that's what those individuals were. There were
a lot of those people, victims are in jail right now because they're being held as witnesses.
So just to be clear, that's the follow-up, that we're making sure that folks are not treated as criminals when they had just suffered traumatic events. And if anything, we need to make sure that SAPD or EMT who's on the scene is caring for those folks as victims. We knew that there was an investigation that needed to happen by Homeland Security, but at the same time that they may be coming on the scene, these individuals need resources, whether it's legal protection or in this case, medical emergency protection that they needed to be made priorities of. So what we've learned is that we need to make sure that in the city of San Antonio, when tragedies like that come to our doorstep, that the proper individuals, SAPD, is not only just treating the medical emergency that's occurring, but thinking about the follow-up of those victims. And I heard stories that turned out to be true, that ICE Border Patrol agents were trying to get access into the hospitals and actually got behind the doors to try to get in, which should not have happened under any circumstances. And that's the type of thing that we need to make sure doesn't happen in the future. So the follow-up is making sure that victims are seen in this victim-oriented perspective from our law enforcement.
But still, the way this thing unfolded, that there are people who come up, you know, without authorization across the border, and they're unlikely to reach out to law enforcement or EMS if they find themselves in a situation, because the last thing they want to do is be sent back home.
Yeah, here's the honest truth about what we can and can't control. The problem is not solved at City Hall, or our police chief is not the person who is the architect of a solution here. It is a Congress who is stepping up to ensure that for folks who are making the decision about trying to change their lives in other countries, that their only option is not just, I need to find a smuggler who can get me in, who I will sell all my savings for, to accumulate money, to pay somebody who will give me no guarantee of safety. If that's the only way to get in, we have a problem. That's the only way to legally get into, that's actually not legally a way to get into the country, but that's the only alternative to somebody's circumstances. It's a very tough system that needs to be fixed by our Congress and our president. And so that's the level of government that needs to be taking a look at this.
Ray Saldana, in his final term as District 4 City Council Member, San Antonio, thank you so much. It was great having you here.
Thank you, Dave.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.